For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
October the 30th, and we are continuing in Derech Hashem. We're up to the fourth parak. So this one is entitled B'matzav Shel Ha'adam B'Olam Hazeh V'Hadrachim Shalafanav B'Derech Prat. So a person's matzav, a person's, I guess it means his situation in this world and the ways that are in front of him in a more specific manner. So last time we already covered the general idea of a person's neshama and a person's guf. I mean, now he's going to get into much more specifics in that area. So we know that we are made up of a neshama and a guf, and the neshama is ruchni and the guf is gashmi. We understand that, and we understand that the goal is that both the ruchni and the gashmi, the ruchni, the neshama, will make the guf into essentially a ruchnius thing, that the guf will be drawn to ruchnius instead of the guf pulling the neshama down to gashmius. We talked about that last time. The Ramchal makes the point that if it wasn't for the fact that Hashem had set it up that the neshama and the guf are forever attached to each other, because even death, as we talked about, is only a temporary thing. There's death, and then there's tchias hameisim. So death happens, and then the neshama goes back into the guf. The death is pulling apart the neshama and the guf, and then tchias hameisim is putting them back together. So the state of death is a temporary state. So ultimately, the guf has to live with the neshama, and the neshama has to live with the guf. The neshama has no choice. The neshama can't decide, well, I'd rather be someplace else. Because even with death, it's not a permanent change. It's only temporary. So therefore, the neshama always needs, its only recourse is to affect the guf. It's the only thing it can do. Think about that kind of situation, you know, where you just have no choice but to deal with your situation. You can't change it. And that's where the neshama is. So, but the fact is that when we are born, we are physical beings. And our physical part is much more real than our spiritual part. Not in reality, but in our perception, our physical part is much more real. The way that the Rishiv Zichron Rav Weinberg used to say this, I think I shared this with you already, is that when you stub your toe, it hurts. And it really does hurt. It's not a calamity, it's not a tragedy, but it really hurts. Whereas if you don't do a chesed today, if you don't think about it, you don't even notice it. If a person does an avera, chas v'shalom, and doesn't think about it, they don't even notice it. And guilt is a good thing. Guilt makes us feel bad. But he's saying there's no sensation, spiritual sensation of loss. That person has to really think hard and really dig deep to experience a spiritual sensation. Physical sensations, it just takes a little stub of the toe and you're all of a sudden, you know, you can't walk. All of a sudden, that's all you can think about is my toe hurts. Everything else is you know, when we sit down, we get up to daven and we can barely think about the words we're supposed to be concentrating on, and if I stub my toe, then I can't think about anything but my toe. So that's how weak we are. That's how, it's not really a weakness. It's the fact that physicality is much more powerful in our perception than spirituality. Not only that, he writes, but the environment in which we live, it's not just our bodies, but the environment in which we live is an obviously physical environment, and you can't see or experience or feel the spiritual part of things unless you really work hard. The physical part is all over the place. The spiritual part If you don't look for it and dig deep, you're not going to find it. So that really the deck is stacked against the Ruchnius. Gashmius is what it's all about. We really are, even though in theory we are a Murkav, we are a grafted being of physical and spiritual, but as far as our day-to-day existence, as far as our perception of how things work, we are really physical, and the physical is much more powerful, it's much more real to us than spiritual. And a person has to acknowledge that if they're going to grow. Because if we delude ourselves into thinking that our physical beings is really not important or not real, and really all that matters is the spiritual, then we're ultimately going to lose, because it's not true. The physical has a much greater grip on our beings than the spiritual part of ourselves. So, therefore, we start off what appears to be at an immense disadvantage. Now remember, this is on the heels of the Chet of Adam HaRishon. Because before the Chet of Adam HaRishon, we talked about how everything was perfectly balanced. And we talked about how a human being, Adam and Chava, experienced spirituality the same way they experienced physicality. One was not stronger than the other. But in the existence we have now, physical is definitely more powerful. So the Ramchal then goes on to explain, though, that in this struggle to have our neshama be in the driver's seat and be the thing that determines what is going to happen and pull our guf up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu rather than the reverse, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did an unbelievable chesed. And he made it that physical acts and physical experiences can make the neshama and the guf spiritual. Just hear clearly, this is obvious to us, this is no big chiddush. It's obvious to all of us this is true. But it's an unbelievable chesed that he did. He could have made it that the only way to grow in Ruchnius is to somehow negate our physical bodies. But he didn't do that. Instead, he set it up that in order to grow in Ruchnius, you do physical things, using your physical body in a physical environment. It is through Gashmius that you reach Ruchnius. That's what he set up. And of course, that's referring to all of the mitzvos. The mitzvos, almost none of them are strictly sichli, are strictly what you're thinking about. Almost all of them involve at least speech, if not a physical act. So that when you eat matzah on Pesach, and you're chewing, and you're biting, and you're eating, and you're swallowing, which is a purely physical act, you are drawing your body towards your neshama, towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The neshama is winning the battle when you eat matzah, even though eating matzah is a purely physical act. It's an unbelievable thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would set it up that way. We take it for granted, because that's what a mitzvah, well, why else do you do a mitzvah? But that it's all like that. All the mitzvahs are like that. All the mitzvahs, almost all of them, are purely physical acts. And they empower the neshama over the guf and draw us to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when we don't do an Aveira, so also we are involved in our physical beings. I want to speak the Lashon Hara and I don't speak the Lashon Hara. What am I doing? I'm controlling my mouth. My focus is not on some of the Elamis and the Malachim and the Kisei HaKavod. My thought is about my mouth. My mouth is a physical thing. That's what it is. I'm deciding to talk or not to talk, or which words to say. It's all a physical thing. And so within the physical world, in a physical environment, a physical body, we serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we get closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's just, stop to think about it, it really is an incredible chesed that he set it up that way, that we're not forced to somehow jump into a different world. We can be firmly rooted in this world and at the same time be drawing ourselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is the whole point of existence. now he says that if it wasn't for death, if it wasn't for the Chet of Adam Arisha, if it wasn't for death, then as soon as you would do a mitzvah, you would perceive your whole being moving closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That would be such an unbelievable imagination. You do a mitzvah, and right when you do that mitzvah, you can actually perceive your body and the neshama getting drawn towards Hashem. And if Chas V'Shalom a person would do an avera, they would actually perceive, sense, feel their body and the neshama moving away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It would be immediate, because the act of a mitzvah brings it closer, and the act Chas V'Shalom of avera brings a person further away, and we would actually feel that. But now that there is death, so therefore there is kind of like a delay. And he writes that what then therefore happens is it all becomes potential rather than actual. That in kayach, in potential, as we, it's kind of like stored up. When you do a mitzvah, your body and soul are now primed to move closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it doesn't move with the same speed or the same force as it would if there wouldn't be death in the world. And therefore there's like a delay. So during our lifetimes, as we grow, we are moving incrementally closer, or chas v'shalom, incrementally further away. But it's kind of, if they're all incremental steps. Then comes death, and then with the Schiyas HaMeisim, then all of a sudden we're propelled to where we should be. What would have happened gradually over the course of our lifetimes, well, there wouldn't be a lifetime, over the course of Olam Hazeh, if there wasn't death, now it becomes this sudden change, this sudden shift, that we go from where we are here to where we should be after Tchias HaMesim. Now, ultimately, everything we do, really, if we were perfect people, and we're not perfect people, but if we would be perfect people, then everything we would be with the intent of getting closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because that is, if you want to sum it up into one sentence of what we're doing here, what's the purpose of being alive, of existing, it is to get closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the whole name of the game. And the way we do that is through the mitzvahs. But even a person like that, who all they're doing is trying to get close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there still are two different types of acts that we would do. One is what we are told to do by Hashem, and two is that which we do because we need to exist. You have to eat, otherwise you're going to die. You have to sleep. You have to bathe. You have to use the bathroom. All these things are things that we do not because it says in the Torah to do them, but because since we have a physical body, the physical body has demands in order for it to function. So we have mitzvahs, both atzeis, most atzeis. If it's cold, you want to eat. We have mitzvahs that we do, and averus that we don't do, but then we also have other things that we do and don't do, not because of they are commanded in the Torah, but because we have to have our bodies that have demands. Our bodies are high maintenance. Right? We have to maintain the body. So there's that as well. So if a person maintains his body or her body for the purpose of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then that also becomes a mitzvah and also draws a person to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is also just mind-boggling. A person needs to eat, and a person needs to sleep, and a person needs to relieve themselves, and a person needs to bathe, and a person needs to do their hair. Not all of us, but a person needs to do these things. And if a person does those things with the intent of maintaining their body so that they can serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu, then those acts also bring a person to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. The very act of eating the food, which you think, again, it's like eating matzah, but now I'm not talking about matzah, I'm talking about eating dinner. So I'm eating dinner, which is a nice, enjoyable thing to do, but if my kavana is I'm eating dinner because I have to have the strength in order to serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu, then the eating of dinner itself is an act, it is a gashmiyistika act, which draws my body to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It overpowers my body with the neshama. It empowers the neshama, even though I'm eating food. And even though it doesn't say in the Torah I should have chicken for dinner, it doesn't say it anywhere. That on Thursday night you should eat chicken for dinner, it doesn't say it anywhere. It doesn't say that. But nevertheless, it doesn't say to have cornflakes for breakfast. But if you have cornflakes for breakfast and you do it with the right intent, then eating cornflakes for breakfast will bring you closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Again, it's an unbelievable thing the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu set up the system that is it is within our power to use to be physical beings, and yet every act that we do is actually empowering our neshama and bringing us closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, there is a big difference between eating, I don't want to use cornflakes, it's too simple. Eating a delicious chicken dinner because I want to serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and eating it because I like chicken and I enjoy it my stomach that calls. So there is a big difference on what I'm thinking. If I sit down and I'm thinking about a Kadosh Baruch Hu, I'm only going to eat what I need. I'm going to make a bracha. I'm going to eat with a certain refinement. I'm going to, if in the middle of my dinner I get pulled away because somebody is helping something or a kid is crying, whatever it is, I'm not going to be upset that I'm walking away from my dinner, because this is one way of serving Hashem, that's another way of serving Hashem. But if I'm sitting down and I'm eating with gusto and I'm overeating and I get annoyed when somebody interrupts my meal, then it's hard to argue that I'm eating in order to serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu. I'm eating because I like to eat. Right? So we're not there. We have to admit that we are physical beings and we are not on the level of doing everything L'shem Shamayim. But if we would do it L'shem Shamayim, and it is possible for every one of us to at least have some Kavanah L'shem Shamayim in everything that we do, that is possible. It is possible that when you sit down to eat and you make a bracha, just think for a moment, I want to eat this in order to serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Even if I'm also eating because I love to eat, but lamaisa, I also need to serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu. A person can have a dual intention. We all have many things motivating us all the time. So those several motivations, but one of them could be l'shem shamayim, which means that the act of eating itself is still partially drawing us to our neshama and to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Now, I just want to make sure I'm not running away with everybody. Any questions before I move to the next step? Okay. Now, make sure I'm not missing something over here before I move to the next thing. Hold on. Yeah. Okay, now. Therefore, we really are trying to do things L'shem Shamayim. Now, to do things L'shem Shamayim, you really need to deal with Ahavat Hashem and Yiras Hashem and Dveikus, all those types of all those, I'll call them feelings, but they're not feelings that happen by themselves. They're directed emotions where we make ourselves love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we make ourselves fear HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we make ourselves cleave to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's really what we're trying to do. The mitzvahs all do that. Now, let's make a point about mitzvahs. When we do a mitzvah, so let's take a mitzvah like I want a mitzvah which is really mundane and that everybody's chayven, including women. I could take matzah again, but let's take something else. I want an assay, not a los assay.
Huh?
You send Tefillah Sadaim? The Tefillah Sadaim is a Derabbanan. What did you say?
Oh, I don't know if that's right. Having
a mezuzah, right. A mezuzah is good, except I want something that has cloth in it. So, like, that sounds very spiritual. One thing that doesn't sound so spiritual. Okay, keep it of aim. Okay, keep it of aim. That's good. Keep it of aim. So, I'm trying to think of something that's, like, even less, that doesn't really make any, it's like a chayk. It doesn't make any sense. How about, yeah, that's not a mitzvah. That's a Kabbalistic thing. Shanez zolo sasei. What did you say? Mezuzah with this cloth in there. It's like, all right, let's take, yeah, tzedakah's good. Tzedakah's good.
Like murder.
Yeah, that's a prohibition. That's a lot.
Oh, okay.
I'm saying that's an asset. I'm just trying to think of something that's like really, that would strike people as very, very strange.
Shabbos?
Yeah, Shabbos is good. Shabbos is good. It's hard to pick out what the mitzvah asse is of Shabbos. You know, to know what is the asse. What's, you know, the lowest asse is much more quantifiable than the asse is. What? Sneas. Sneas, okay. Sneas is really a low asse. It's not really an asse. Okay, but anyway, let's take the mitzvah of ma'aka. Men and women are equally chayiv in ma'aka. So if you have an area in your house that has a drop, and it's an area that's regularly used, so you have to put up a fence, so that person doesn't fall off. So I'm building this fence. It's a mitzvah. There's a bracha to be made, and I'm building this fence. And when I do it, I have a mitzvah of maka. So when I'm building this maka, I am doing something very, very physical, and in so doing, I am giving power to my neshama over my guf. Even though I'm using my guf, everything is physical here, but my neshama is overpowering my guf and bringing me closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, what is making me be brought close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu about building a maka? Is it the act of building the maka, or is it the fact that I'm listening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? You understand what I'm saying? Meaning that Hashem said, build the maka. So I take a hammer, I take nails, I take some boards, and I build a maka. So is it the act of building that brings me close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or is it the fact that Hashem said to do it, and I'm listening to Him? Meaning, is there any difference between building a maka, or if Hashem would say, stand on your head, I would stand on my head? I'm just listening to what He told me to do.
No. I would say no.
Yeah, what would you say? Go ahead.
I would say, if you're doing it because Hashem said, then there's no difference between doing that and say standing on your head. But if you're to prove it, right, you have someone who builds a fence because Hashem said, someone who builds a fence is not because Hashem said, it's just a total random reason they want to build a fence. That's not bringing them closer to Hashem. This is. So that proves that the fact that's bringing closer to Hashem is not the fact that you're sitting there being with a hammer and nail. It proves that the fact that it's the thought behind it. In fact, because what happened before that, Hashem told you.
So you're listening to Hashem.
Yeah.
So if Hashem would say, stand on your head, and you stand on your head, so again, you're listening to Hashem.
You know, a Jew doesn't know the mitzvah. They happen to have a rooftop they can get to, and they build a fence. Does that bring them closer to Hashem?
We pass in mitzvahs trichus kavana. You have to have intent to do a mitzvah.
So then that proves Ali Shah's point, because
that what? That the ikkar is that you're listening to
Hashem.
But
that you're listening to Hashem. It's not okay. The fact that you're building okay. A fence in a high place.
Do you want
to
say?
I was going to say that there are things that we do without kavana, and that.
Like?
Well, davening,
would you just No, it's true, but you're only davening because Hashem said to daven. It's true, you may not be thinking about when you're davening, but you wouldn't daven if Hashem didn't say to daven.
But even things that we do, like at this point by rote, because, and yes, we're still doing them because Hashem said, but we do them every day without the kavana.
Yeah, I mean, because you wouldn't do it if it wasn't a mitzvah. So ultimately, going way back, you're doing it because it's a mitzvah. But what the Ramchal writes is that every mitzvah actually has two elements to it, and he's not the only one who says this. The Rambam, the Rosh Yeshiva Zohar Racha used to be medayik, and the Rambam this way as well.
there's two elements to the mitzvah, both of which bring you close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One is you're listening to Him. He said do X and you're doing X. He said do Y and you're doing Y. In which case, it really wouldn't make a difference what He says. By listening, you're drawn closer to Him. But it's more than that. It's that Hashem He embedded in the Bria that when you do this act, it brings you closer to Him. Provided that you're commanded to do it. So if a non-Jew keeps Shabbos, it does not bring them closer to the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Because they're not supposed to. But if you're commanded to do it, Hashem embedded in the Bria that not only are you getting closer to Hashem because you're listening to Him, but the actual act itself brings you closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's a dual schar to each mitzvah. There's a schar because you listen to Hashem, and the actual act is mashlam you. It makes a person a better person. How? We don't know. We don't see it. But it makes a person a better person, meaning it makes their neshama stronger and their guf weaker, and it draws them to HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Is that how Mitoch Shel Lishma Bal Lishma works?
It could be. You're pointing out that Mitoch Shel Lishma Bal Lishma is, I know it's a mitzvah, so there is kavanah to do a mitzvah, but I'm doing it because the reason why I'm eating the chalent on Shabbos is not because of Oneg Shabbos. I'm doing it because I like chalent. That's Shel Lishma. But I am still doing Oneg Shabbos. That's what you're pointing out. So that's the contrast to what we said before. That it's true, what Elisha said is true, that if a person wouldn't have any kavanah for a mitzvah, it would not bring them closer to Hashem. But if a person has kavanah for a mitzvah, but is still doing it because I like to eat, I happen to love matzah. Oh, that matzah is really delicious. So because of that, I'm eating the matzah, so I'm still being drawn close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu because eating matzah is inherently a physical act that brings me closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
So is that why a mitzvah but also is greater than a mitzvah?
Yeah.
Because, so let's say, what about women eating in the sukkah? They're not getting that same
component. Okay, good. So we're going to talk about a mitzvah in just a minute. Okay, good. So we're going to actually move right on to that. Just any other questions about this point? Now, I just want to just make sure there's one last thing here, just make sure I don't miss. Right. He makes a point that, I just want to forget to say it, that getting closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we talk about getting closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but what's actually happening is, it is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, kivyachol, so to speak, his ha'aras panav, the shine of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have a shine, but it's a figure of speech. The shine of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is on the person and makes a person a more spiritual person. It's not coming from me. It's coming from Hashem. So the way he sets it up is that Hashem is constantly trying to put that ha'aras panim on us. Every single one of us, there's this constant... I'm going to couch it in physical terms, but it's obviously not real. There's this constant beam being shot towards each one of us from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that is a ruchnius, and whether we access it or not depends on on what we do. Meaning, he's not turning it on and turning it off. It's there. It's all there. If we choose to do the mitzvah, so then our neshama overpowers our guf and draws us to Hashem, which means makes ourselves available to accept some of that ha'aras panav. That's the way he sets it up. So we shouldn't look at it as he's up there and we're like clawing our way up there. It's all ready. It's all there. It's just a question of making ourselves available to it. Now, this is where we need to say in the mitzvah of Osa. Of all the mitzvahs that there are, and it's a mitzvah to do things, it's also a mitzvah not to follow your Yetzirah. Of all those mitzvahs, so in other words, if I have a Yetzirah to eat something which I'm not supposed to eat, or if I have a Yetzirah to say something I'm not supposed to say, so if a person just, right now we're sitting in this room, and we're not eating pork. All of us are not eating pork. It's a great thing that we're not eating pork. That means we're not being drawn away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu by eating pork. Because if we would eat pork, Chas V'Shalom, it would pull us away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we're not pulling ourselves away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The question is, by not eating pork right now, are we being drawn closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And the answer is no, because we don't have, right now, neither the urge, I hope, nor the ability, right now, to eat pork. There's no pork here. So, therefore, the act of not eating pork is not bringing us closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu right now. But when a person has the Yetzirah and refrains, then at that moment, it's like a mitzvah saseh. That actually brings you closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If I have Lashon Hara to say, and I don't say it, that actually has my neshama overpower my guf and brings me closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. No different than eating the matzah on Pesach.
Also, if at one point someone had that urge to eat pork and didn't, and so they brought themselves to the point where it was never a choice for them anymore, they also get scar. Like from that point
for having
on,
gotten
right?
to that, yeah, for yeah. having gotten to that point. But it's not the same thing as having a current struggle. Right now, when I'm struggling not to say that Lashon Hara, there's that's a much more profound and powerful scar. Yeah.
What about if, let's say, like Shabbos,
that
you're standing, but you, it's dark in the room and you would like to turn on the light switch. So, like, you're not turning it on, but let's say you have the ability and, like, you would like to, but you're not.
Yeah, so there is an element there as well. The Rosh Hashanah Weinberg used to say that he asked this question, how many times do we exercise our Bechira every day? So, he said that there are those who would argue that you only exercise your Bechira just a few times per day. It's only when you really have a struggle and you either do the right thing or Chas V'Shalom the wrong thing, then you're choosing. But other than that, you're not. He said, it is not true. He said, every time you go to the store and you want to buy something and you pick it up to see if there's a heksher on it and it doesn't have a heksher, you put it down, and if it has a heksher, you put it in your cart, that's bechira. Now, it's not this mammoth struggle, but you exercise bechira. So you're right. By choosing not to turn on the light, when I really, it would be nice to turn on the light right now. It's not a tremendous struggle, but it would be nice to do it. I could do it. And it would be nice, but I'm not going to do it. So it is Bechira, and I do get scarred for choosing not to. But it's not as profound as when it's a really hard struggle.
What isn't like what Ruf Desley says on that, the opposite, like that Nekudas HaBechira?
Yes, the Nekudas HaBechira, the Rishiva was explaining the Nekudas HaBechira. It doesn't mean that there's no Bechira whatsoever. A person can choose to do a lot of things. It's just that it's not the monumental struggle.
But it's not even really a choice.
Yeah, I don't know if the Rashiva agreed. I don't remember how Avesta says it exactly, but he felt that you are choosing all the time. But of all the mitzvahs, both to do something and not to do something, the most powerful mitzvah that there is what's that? Liman HaTorah. Liman HaTorah is the most powerful. Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. There is no greater mitzvah than Liman HaTorah. It is the one that is the most powerful in causing our neshama to overpower our guf and pull us closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he breaks it down that Talmud Torah has two aspects to it. There is the words of Torah, meaning the speaking in Torah, and then there is the thinking in Torah. Both aspects are part of Limud HaTorah. Now, let's talk from a man's perspective right now. So a man has a mitzvah of Limud HaTorah that he's mechuyev to do. A man doesn't have a choice. A man must learn Torah. Now, the Limud HaTorah that man is doing is both in the words that he's saying and in what he's thinking. Which means that in theory, a man could be involved in Talmud Torah for the vast majority of his day, if he can really, even if he's not sitting and learning in the Beis Medrash. He can be thinking in Torah, he can be talking in Torah, he can be going it through in his mind. That Limud HaTorah is empowering his neshama over his guf and drawing him closer to the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it is the most powerful, more than all the other mitzvahs. Now, he doesn't say this, but I want to mention it to you. You know this already, but I'm just going to tell you it. It's always worth going over it again. It's always worth saying it again, just to strengthen ourselves. And it's worth it to know it from how the Gemara sets it up. The Gemara asks the question. The Gemara says, this is not in the Ramchal anymore, this is the Gemara in the Masechet Sota. The Gemara says that mitzvahs and Torah both have power to protect a person. They can protect a person both physically from dangers and from doing averus. They both have power. Mitzvahs both protect a person physically, shomer mitzvah lo yeda davar ra, as long as it's not a makom sakana, but a mitzvah protects the person physically, and a mitzvah also protects a person from his own yetzer hara, but only while he's performing the mitzvah. Only while performing the mitzvah. Taira will protect a person physically while they are learning Taira. It will also protect him from the yetzer hara while he's learning Taira. But even when he is not learning Taira, Taira also affords a measure of protection. How much protection it affords, it's a discussion in the Gemara, exactly what the Taira does for a person even when he's not learning. The fact that he learned, there still is a measure of protection even when he's not learning right now. So the Gemara asks the question, how are women able to access that protection? And we can ask the same question with the Ramchal. If Torah is the mitzvah that is the most powerful in empowering our neshama over our guf and bring us closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how are women able to access that power? Says the Gemara. This is a Gemara. This is not a Medrash. This is not a Mefarish. This is the Gemara itself. Says the Gemara. It can't be through learning. It's impossible for it to be through learning, says the Gemara. Because a woman is an Eina Mitzuvah Va'aisa. Because she's not commanded. And we know when you're not commanded, the reward, and therefore the power of it, is less than when a person is a Mitzuvah Va'aisa. And therefore, it is not possible for a woman to access both the protection of Torah and the growth in getting close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through Limud HaTorah that a man gets. A woman can't get that through learning. It's impossible. You can have all the feminists in the world scream and yell about it and say they want to have a kol where they're going to learn. It's not going to do for them what it does for a man. Hashem set up the system that it can't. It'll never do it for them. So the Gemara asks the question, then how does a woman access it? And that's where the Gemara answers the question that the way that a woman accesses both the growth in Torah that we're talking about here in the Ramchal and also the protection of Torah that the Gemara is talking about in Masechet Sota is by enabling Limud HaTorah for a man. That when a woman encourages is also good, but when a woman is the cause of Limud HaTorah, then that Limud HaTorah that she enabled accrues to her as well. The way the Gemara says it is, when the women get the men in their lives, whether it's their sons or brothers or husbands or fathers or cousins or uncles or neighbors or whatever it is, when a woman gets the men in her life to learn Torah, the Gemara says, don't they, it says, lav palgin bididan, don't they split it with us? That's the language of the Gemara. Don't they get the same that we get? That's the language of the Gemara. When a woman enables Limud HaTorah, then all of this accrues to a woman no different than a man. You have to hear very clearly, it's no different. All of the protection that the Gemara is talking about, and all of the empowering the neshama over the guf, and bringing us close to Hashem, that the Ramchal is talking about, better than all the other mitzvahs, when a woman enables a man to learn. So therefore, you have to think this through very carefully. I used to talk to you about this when we were in Columbus.
Yeah.
Right? You have two women. One woman says, I want to study Torah. It's not fair that only men get to do it. I want to learn Torah too. She sits down to learn Torah. Okay? Another woman says that I recognize that I could learn Torah, but I also recognize that it's more important that a man learns Torah. And therefore, I'm going to take a job or a burden off of a man so that a man can go learn Torah. Whoever the man is. But I know that my father, my brother, my son, my husband, whatever it is, I know he has to do X, Y, and Z. I'm going to do it instead so that he can go learn Torah. So the woman who learns Torah is not protected as much. The woman who learns Torah does not get closer, as close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A little bit she does, because it is, she is doing a mitzvah, but it's not as much. The woman who took that mundane job off the man's plate so he could go learn, that woman is now, has done something which has brought her closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu than any other mitzvah she could possibly do. Not just that she's closer than the other woman. The woman who eats matzah on Pesach, which we all have to do, not saying it shouldn't be matzah on Pesach, but when you eat matzah on Pesach, it brings you closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When you enable a man to learn, it brings you closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu than eating matzah on Pesach. Just like when a man learns and a man eats matzah on Pesach, both bring him closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but learning brings him closer than eating matzah on Pesach. Enabling Limud HaTorah brings you closer. So even though what you might be doing is setting the table or changing a diaper or taking out the trash, right? Or perhaps taking a job, or even if it's something, another type of thing, even if it's not as direct as that, even if it's somehow the there's a problem, the Beis Medrash isn't able to function because of Chveis, I don't know, whatever, there's a problem, and a woman is able to somehow make it that now the Beis Medrash is functional again, so that brings her closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu than any other mitzvah can do, and it makes her neshama overpower her guf more profoundly than any other mitzvah. The enabling of Limud HaTorah that a woman does is equal to the learning of Torah that a man does. And that Limud HaTorah is the most powerful of all the mitzvahs. Talmud Torah Keneged Kula. Any questions?
Yes, you mentioned that, like, a man technically, there's the learning, and then there's also the machshava. So you said a man can also do the machshava technically all day long. Like, whatever he's doing, business or whatever, you can have this machshava, then that machshava will also protect him, as just like what he's doing the mitzvah. So, for a woman can't, how does a woman get like that machshava?
It's the same thing. It can be done all day long if you're an I'm sitting at home at my dining room table and I'm learning. I have a Gemara open in front of me. Right?
Yeah.
And my wife has something she wants to speak to me about, and she doesn't do it. She doesn't interrupt. That's it. She just did it. She just enabled Limud HaTorah. Right? She just enabled Limud HaTorah. The kids are running around, and she pulls them away. She just enabled Limud HaTorah. But it doesn't have to be that direct. It doesn't have to be that direct. If she wasn't running all the things that she's running, they would all be on my head, right? And then I wouldn't be able to learn as much. So then, right? It's very difficult to be thinking and learning all the time. It's very difficult. It's easy to do when you don't feel pressured in other ways. So So if a woman is the reason why the man is not feeling pressured, then all that thinking and learning that he's doing accrues to her.
So does that mean that every single moment that the woman is at home taking care of the kids so the husband can learn, or doing the job or doing whatever it is, every single moment that she's doing that, she gets the same car just like every single woman? So it's not like, oh, you did one thing, like you took the kids out to the park.
It's every moment. It's every second. It's every second. It's every second. That's what it is. That's the way it works. It accrues equally. Okay. Okay, so that was the fourth parak. Now, just to give you, just for example, there's one more parak. Let me just think. Yeah, there's one more parak in this. He has it in Chalakim. The first chalak, which is really, he entitles the first chalak Yesodos HaMetzius. Okay, means existence. So there's one more parak about Metzius, about existence. Then, after that, we move into Hashgachas HaBaris Baruch Shemo, how Hashem runs the world, which is really what I told you we were going to get to, about the ins and outs of how HaKadosh Baruch Hu chooses to do things, and how things run in the world. That's a whole other chelek. But we have one more parakah just about defining our existence, and then we'll move on to the next part.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.